wants to. Is this a good tone? I mean, volume for speaking? Can everyone hear if I speak this loud? Okay. All right. I tend to be quieter, so I'm, you know, I have to make a little effort on my part, but it's worth it. In the back, I have a few things I brought with me just to peruse. There's a book from Pskov of church scenes and some iconography. There's a CD that if you haven't seen it yet, of the return of the Tikvin Mother of God icon to Russia in 2004. It's a documentary, very inspiring. And I'm going to talk about that icon because it figures into the history I'm going to talk about today. As Mother Melania said, when history in the Orthodox Church is interesting, in secular history, we're often concerned with understanding the past in terms of power and influence. So this approach would address the factors or people that are responsible for historical movements, countries, wealth, ideas. It's, you know, what's behind things. What makes things work? You know, and it's often a spotlight that this type of history would place on the past. Whereas in our history, that kind of history doesn't always satisfy the yearning of faith. In our history, we can discover the light of Christ. That light is not shown from a spotlight, but emerges from within the lives of the people who live out their faith. And we peer past the darkness, layers of darkness in history, to discover treasures. And in my case, it was unexpected that I came across some amazing stories, and what I'm going to focus on is not the entire oral history project I did, but the thread that ties these three priests together. From 1919 to 1940, between the world wars, the three Baltic states enjoyed political independence of a democratic variety. Now, during this time, the hierarchs serving the Orthodox churches in this area were under the jurisdiction of the Patriarchate of Constantinople, even though they're physically adjacent to the Soviet Union or Russia. In 1939, as we know from World War II, Germany invaded Poland. That was the first country to be invaded in the war. And in 1940, the Soviet Union invaded the Baltic states, forming a front with Germany. And despite an agreement between Hitler and Stalin not to attack one another during this period along this front, the German troops invaded the Baltic states and went deep into Soviet territory in 1941. The occupation of a very large territory from below Leningrad, including the ancient city of Pskov and surrounding regions, lasted for 2.5 years, from August 1941 to 1944. And then the Soviet forces mounted an offensive, pushing the Germans from the area and reclaiming their land. In this offensive, however, the unfortunate Baltic states were reinvaded by the Soviet Union, and the populations lived under the Soviet yoke until the return of political independence in 1991. Now, this is the this backdrop is important for the stories that I'm going to share during World War II. And of course, so 1939 to 1945 is the rough, you know, that's the span of the World War. And we're going to focus on a small part, but not the war, but some activity in the church during that time. The lives of two honored archpriests and the memories, well, three honored archpriests, but in the memories of Father Alexei Yonov in his Reflections of a Missionary, which was graciously translated at the Kazanskiy in Santa Rosa from Russian, detailed events in the life of the church during this period, marking a true miracle of faith, and tied together the lives of these three priests as well as others, several others. All three priests, Father Nicholas Vaglis, Father George Bennigsen, and Father Alexei, came from Latvia, And all three finished their parish duties in communities in the San Francisco Bay Area. The stories that unfold took place during a tragic war and many years later, though today's focus is the time of the war and its immediate aftermath. There was life in the displaced persons camps for Father Nicholas, and the presence of the widely venerated icon of the Theotokos, the Tikvin, Mother of God icon. Father Nicholas was born in 1907 and died in 1992. George Bennigsen, born in 1915 in Kazan, Russia, died in 1993. And Father Alexei was born in 1907 and died in 1977. And an interesting note is that Father Alexei was born just 2 days before Father Nicholas. Of the three, Father Nicholas was native Latvian. The others were of Russian descent. But there are many Russians in Latvia, especially in the eastern part of the country. Now, these priests were not only archpriests, but they had a very special distinction, all three of them, in that they wore the mitre. In fact, I remember from Fort Ross recently, there were several mitred archpriests there, if you noticed. They're like wearing priest vestments, but they have a crown that looks like a bishop's crown. And this is a very special distinction. It's the highest award given to a priest. It's no longer practiced in the OCA. At some point, they stopped giving that award out. But it is practiced in the Russian Church abroad, and it is practiced in Russia and areas there. My brother-in-law, in fact, is a mitred archpriest. My wife is the youngest of six children, and her oldest brother is 19 years older. So he's been a priest almost 50 years. This year, 50 years. And it's this mitre commemorates the crown of Christ that was given to him on the day of his betrayal, and also symbolizes for the priest the glory that awaits those who struggle for eternal life. It's not a small gift. In other words, it's something that's given for an extraordinary gift to the church. All three of them had that distinction. The country of Latvia is located on the eastern shore of the Baltic Sea. It's commonly grouped with its neighbors to the immediate north, Estonia, and the immediate south, Lithuania, as the Baltic states. The Latvian and Lithuanian languages have Indo-European roots, whereas Estonian, like Finnish, comes from a language family tracing its roots to the nomadic tribes of the Far East. Up until the 15th century, Latvians were predominantly Catholic. Then, as in several other countries in the area, the churches turned to Lutheranism during the troubled times in Europe. But in the 19th century, some Latvians began joining the Orthodox Church. As highlighted in an article that was published some years ago in the St. Vladimir Seminary Quarterly, there's a certain bishop from Latvia, Filaret Gumilevski, and he's attributed with attracting converts to Orthodoxy and building several churches. He lived from 1805 to 1866. And it's from this religious background that Father Nicholas's grandparents had come, and Father Nicholas's father, Andrew, was also an Orthodox priest. Father Nicholas shared his memories as a child of events during World War I, during which his family was transported as refugees to Saratov on the Volga River, a long distance from Latvia. He remembered as a 7-year-old child, just the only thing he remembered was changing trains 3 times. It took that long to get there. The family lived in Saratov for 5 years, and he described the church as being crowded for services each day with thousands of people. This is in Soviet Russia, despite the fact that the church was not an officially recognized institution. Toward the end of their time in Saratov, at the Cathedral of St. Alexander Nevsky, the young Nicholas became a psalm reader at the age of 12. And this term psalm reader is is like a leader, somebody who's that's what they called him. I think in Russian there's a special term for it, but Salomchik, I think, was Mother Seraphim. Yeah, so he was made at age 12, and now here's his words. There was a bishop and four priests, but no psalm reader. Nobody wanted to do it. It was dangerous for workers. So his description is that anybody, a lay person, who would volunteer in the church would be marked, basically, because it was a Soviet time. And they, you know, things wouldn't go well for them in one way or the other if they stood up. But a 12-year-old, what are they going to do? So in 1920, the Vagelis family was able to return to Latvia, where Nicholas's father served as priest in a village about 75 kilometers from the capital of Riga. At age 17, Nicholas went to an agricultural school in Latvia. When I asked him why he chose this type of school, he answered this way. My idea was this. Each church had 100 acres of land, and apparently the land was given at some point by the barons, or land was taken away from the barons and given to the churches. So each church had a certain slot of land they're on. And so I thought, he said, if I could graduate from agricultural school, I would enter the seminary, and then I would be a priest. But I would be working on that land, and I would have enough money and everything. And then reflecting on its entrance into the seminary, he explains this further. Because of my knowledge of agriculture, I knew I could work. In the meantime, the Polish government somehow pressed their farmers, so they tried to get jobs elsewhere, and the Latvian government allowed them to come to Latvia and work by helping the farmers. They didn't ask for much money, and of course that monetary support was enough for them, and even to send to their relatives in Poland. And so I thought, if I couldn't do the work myself, I could get one or two workers. Of course, they'd be paid more so they could prosper, not just be beggars. But I did not end up in the country. And indeed, Nicholas, a student, made his way to Riga, the capital, and during his seminary years was befriended by a professor who was the dean of the cathedral in Riga, Father John Jansen, or Jansen, a convert to Orthodoxy. Father Nicholas shared with me the touching story of his meeting his wife and how he became a bookkeeper in a town hall while serving as a reader in the choir. He also began learning the art of printing and transcribing church music. In short order, the word was received through the dean of that the Archbishop, John Palmers, requested Nicholas to be ordained as a deacon. Now, Archbishop John was a popular church leader, but also the target of the Soviet secret police, even though this was not in Russia, but outside of the Soviet Union. And then this tragedy unfolded. Then one day, this is Father Nicholas speaking, I suppose it was October 14th or so, came the bad news by telephone and radio that the bishop had been killed that night. Then the dean took me, and we went by streetcar to his suburb dacha, or residence. So Father Jansen and the seminary Nicholas performed a panakita at the home of the Archbishop John the morning after he was murdered. While the case has never been solved by the police, or was never solved by the police, Father Nicholas explained to me that the Archbishop had been tied down and a fire had been started, and that they found smoke in the Archbishop's lungs, proving that he had been burned while still alive. Events progressed quickly, and start during a synodal meeting headed by the Metropolitan of Estonia, Alexander, before the Archbishop's funeral, it was decided that the bishop's last wish that Nicholas be ordained a deacon be honored, and Nicholas was ordained a deacon on the day of the funeral. Archbishop John Palmer is widely considered a martyr, one of many church leaders whose lives were taken during the Soviet era.